Welcome to another installment of the Monsters of Book Marketing interview series, sponsored by TheAuthorsEdge.com. And today we are talking with Brian Judd. And Brian, in my opinion, is one of the true monsters of book marketing. And of course, I mean that in a good way. Brian is the author of How to Make Real Money Selling Books and also Beyond the Bookstore. Both great, great books that you're going to, I'm sure, want to check out. And especially Beyond the Bookstore, as it applies to today's interview, which describes new ways to sell more books profitably to special sales buyers, which is the topic of today's interview. Brian's also a partner in Premium Book Company, where he sells books on a commission-only basis to buyers in non-bookstore markets. He conducts the series of Publishing at Sea seminars conducted during a Caribbean cruise. Very nice. And he also publishes the Book Marketing Monthly teleseminars. He's the author of a series of printed booklets with proving tips for publishing success. And he's the editor of the Book Marketing Matters Special Sales Newsletter, creator of the Special Sales Profit Center, and sort of a multimedia star. He's also the host of the television show The Book Authority and author and narrator of the media training video You're on the Air. You can reach Brian via email at Brian Judd, that's Brian, common spelling, J-U-D, at bookmarketing.com, or simply visit his website at bookmarketing.com. And now, without further ado, let's get to the interview.
Great. And so I have Brian Judd on the line. And Brian, thanks for agreeing to do this interview.
My pleasure, Chris. Looking forward to it.
And now I know that probably a lot of authors have kind of heard of special sales, but they're probably not really all that familiar with it. So maybe if you could just start out, we can jump right in. You could tell me basically what special sales are.
Sure. It's really a good point, because most authors will say, well, I'm going to sell my books outside the bookstore. But it's a pretty big marketplace. Actually, it's larger than the bookstore market. The U.S. market for books is about $38 billion, and more than half of that is in non-bookstore marketing. And when people say outside of bookstores, they immediately think of libraries or Walmart or airport stores, which are certainly feasible. But really, it's better. What I do, Chris, is I divide it in two sections. One is retail, and one's non-retail. Retail would be the airport stores and the Walmarts and museums or zoos or specialty stores, places in which you would have the books on the shelf. The non-retail would be corporations and associations, government, schools, military accounts, and so forth. So the important thing is to know where you want to sell your books, why they're going to buy them, and how to approach them. But the first step is to divide it, I think, in those two groups.
Right. And now I remember, I think I told you that you were kind of the first person introducing me to this whole, I don't know if I remember the phrase right, but is it market mapping?
Market map. That's right. Exactly right. You're right.
Okay. And I'm sorry, why don't you describe it? You do it better than I would.
Sure. that's actually a term that I coined to, it was a form of mind mapping. I just took the market mapping from that. But it's basically, it's creating a list of, or a map. I'm very visually oriented, so I like to see what I'm doing. And I just created these circles of opportunity based on the content of the book. So, for example, if you have a children's book, you might look at selling it to children's libraries or schools or to homeschooling groups or to children's museums or to PTAs. And so what market mapping does is show how these groups can interact and how they emanate from the content of the book, and then you use that as a searching device. Once you have all these outlined, then you would go to these specific areas and do the search to find out the names of the people to contact. But it's just basically it's a visual orientation of the opportunities for a particular title.
Right. So it's a form of brainstorming too, right? I mean, it gets you really thinking about all these different places where you could sell your book.
Exactly right, Chris. It forces brainstorming, but it directs brainstorming, so it's more profitable, I think, and more likely to come up with your good opportunities.
Okay. So we talked, for example, obviously about libraries, and you said for a children's book, maybe PTA, you know, organizations, stuff like that. What are some other examples, just to get people thinking of, you know, places outside of a bookstore where they could sell their book?
Well, if you have the look at the retail, for example, you have airport stores, you have supermarkets. And actually, those are two places in which fiction outsells nonfiction in non-bookstore markets. Because a lot of people think, well, I've got a fiction book, so I can't sell non-bookstores. But that's not correct, because you can sell it to airport stores, supermarkets, some display marketing companies like Books Are Fun and Imagination both sell fiction. So the museums and zoos would sell fiction. If you have a historical novel, for example, you could sell it in museum or zoos. Gift shops, specialty stores. Would be like a gift shop. Hallmark sells a lot of books, and other gift shops do also. Then you have book clubs, catalog marketing. So the retail section offers a lot of opportunities, and these are places that, to realize, it's a lot like selling to a bookstore, because you have to have a distributor in most cases. The books are returnable, and they're going to take a 60% discount off it. So it's much like selling to a bookstore in the retail market.
Right. Right, and now the other side of this, which we haven't really talked about yet, would be, for example, selling to corporations where they could use the book as a premium,
right,
or to retain customers or subscribers or something like that. Could you talk a little bit about that, too?
Sure. The companies, large companies and small companies, use books for a variety of reasons. They might use it as the human resources department might use a book on motivation or a book on retirement to help their employees when they need motivation or information on retirement. They might use it as a gift for customers. And again, fiction would do well here, and as would nonfiction. And use it for branding, use it for in addition to the corporate library. The corporate libraries are a diminishing breed, because as the budgets get crunched, and a lot of times the library is one of the first things to go. But there are a lot of corporations that have libraries, and you can get books, and particularly if you have a book on a topic. They use it for partnership marketing, for coming up with, for example, a book on mortgages. One of my clients has a book on mortgages, and we're going to a bank. And we've gone to a bank, and they're setting up a library in each of their branches with books on how to buy a mortgage, how to get a home loan, how to get a business loan. And if you come in there to find out information about getting a loan from the bank, you get a free book. So that type of working with a company, the corporation, is very successful. Association with the cause, if the corporation is against child abuse or against pet abuse or against spouse abuse or whatever, I hate to be negative here, but if you have a book on those topics, or anger management could be a great way to partner with a company. These, just as a promotional tool, for example, Chris, they'll use a book as a premium.
Right.
Or a coupon, or maybe a prize, or a patronage award, or as samples. I know that there's one company that, one printing company, printed up a booklet on their paper, and they used the content of the booklet was something that Paulette Ensign did, a book that she did on business tips, and they printed this booklet up on each sheet was a different example of their paper. I think it was Hammermill that did that. So they used it as a way to give information, but also to provide a sample of their paper. So there are some great ways to use books for a corporation.
And it's sort of maybe just to give people a kind of common example, like you might have like a coupon on the back of a cereal box or something, right? I mean, that's an example of a premium.
Sure. It could be a coupon on the back of a cereal box. It might be what they're trying to do is give you a free book as a reward for buying the product. Or it could be as a self-liquidator, where if it's an expensive book, you may have a coffee table book where it's a $40 product and they're trying to give it some value. So a self-liquidator is where you purchase the product at some greatly diminished cost. It might be $10, something that would just at least cover the cost of the book. But that is used as a premium is a great way to approach a corporation.
Right. And now the other thing I think that, and tell me if I'm off base here, but that people have to keep in mind, when they're selling in a bookstore, you know, they're basically selling one book at a time. When you're selling when you're making these special sales, a lot of times, especially if you're selling corporations or nonprofits or something like that, you can sell hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of copies at a time.
It depends. but generally, you're right, Chris. In the non-retail area particularly, in the retail area, you have the same terms as a bookstore in general, as
right.
a retail operation, but as we said. But on the non-bookstore area, sure, we had a shoe store chain that bought books. They bought e-books. We set up a gift card program where somebody buys X number of dollars of children's shoes. They get to choose from a variety of e-books. And the campaign was, we take care of your child from head to toe. And it was very successful. They just bought e-books, obviously, but they can buy in large quantities. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I never would have thought that that would work with e-books. I always would have thought it would have had to have been some sort of physical product.
We're actually starting up a new catalog, which has a whole section on e-books. We're setting up gift card programs with companies just to do that. And it will be a major factor in book sales or in content sales, which is, if I may just address that quickly, Chris, that's probably the biggest difference in special sales marketing versus bookstore marketing. Bookstore marketing is selling books. In non-bookstore marketing, you're selling the content. People are interested in what does the book mean to me? What does it mean to my employees? What's it mean to my business? And the copyright date is not nearly as important as the content of the book, which is what we're selling in non-bookstore markets.
Right. So it's content and message and how that message helps whoever you're selling to further their message as well, right, or their brand.
Right. In my presentations, I tell people they'll be more successful when they stop selling their books and they're selling the content of the book.
Yeah, that's actually one thing I wanted to ask you. You talk about one of your books, Beyond the Bookstore. You say that publishers should stop selling their books.
Yeah.
So why don't you talk about what you mean by that?
That's getting to the concept of the content, where the buyers are looking for information on the mortgage book. How can your information help my customers buy a mortgage better and then buy it from us? And if the pub date was 2 years ago, it doesn't matter. Is the information current, and is it applicable to my needs? And those are their criteria. So they're not looking for books per se. It may be an e-book. They may take the content and put it on their website. They may add a chapter to it or add a forward to it by the CEO. They may customize it. They may put their logo. They may change the cover. They're not looking for books. They're looking for the information in it, because they can always redesign or customize the physical book in order to make the content available to their buyers. So that's why I think you stop selling your books and sell the content, sell what the book does. It's the feature advantage benefit concept. The feature is the book. The benefit is what the information in the book does for the recipient.
Yeah, and that's actually a great point for selling anything.
You're exactly right.
Yeah. Let's come back to sort of the retail and the corporation side, but I wanted to ask you something about a topic. When I first heard you speak, and it totally blew my mind, because I didn't know – well, I guess I kind of had it in the back of my mind that it was possible, but to do it on the scale that you're doing it was kind of just shocking to me. Now, you also say that the government is actually a good place to start selling books.
Yes.
And the armed services as well. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. The government is actually a great place, because it's an arm of the of opportunity that has to be nice to you. They have to return your call in 24 hours, because you're a customer there, but you're also a client. So it's an organization that buys. It's one of the largest printers and disseminator of information in the world. And they buy in large quantities. They can buy, they can license, they can acquire your product. You can actually sell the rights to the government. And they just it's a tremendous place to start out. It doesn't have to be in the military. Look at the government agencies. There's a website called FedBizOps, FedBizOps.gov. And that lists what the government buys and their different divisions or their different groups, from whom they're buying it, what the content is, what the pricing is, and when they buy it. So it's a tremendous opportunity. And I sold my I wrote a series of job search books and booklets and a video. And I sold those to the state departments of the departments of labor. And it was a very lucrative. In many cases, they'll buy at list price. They have to pay within 30 days. And they're all non-returnable. So those are pretty good terms.
Right, yeah. You won't find those terms really anywhere, really.
Right? I sure won't.
Yeah, I was going to ask you for an example of books that you've sold to the government. And I forgot. You had told me that story years ago, and I forgot about that. Any other examples of, when you've been able to I was going to say place a book with the government, but basically make another sale like that?
We have books on, for the military, for example, we have books on, this goes back to a call I got from a prison library. And the librarian said they want to buy books. I said, why? And because people get out of the prison, they want to get a job, obviously. And I sold 1,500 books to prison libraries. And I thought, who else is in the same situation? Well, the military. People get out of the military and they want to get a job. So I went to the exchanges, and there's a website, www.aafes, Army Air Force Exchange Service. And an enormous website. And I sold books on there to the military because they were the people, when they get out of the service, they want to know how to get a job, and I had the job search books. So if you're selling to the military, don't think about what the service person is looking for. Think about what the family is looking for, Chris, because if they have the base may be looking for a book on how, or information on how the spouse of a regularly transferred service person, how a spouse can transfer his or her business, or a book on how a child can deal with frequent moves, or books on finance, on abuse, on with chemical abuse or physical abuse. So the military exchanges buy a lot of these books on topics that you would never expect, but when you think about it, they make sense because their target audience is not just the service person, but the whole family, and they're looking for children's books and books on almost any topic. Fiction sells well too.
Right. So the point, I guess, basically is, you really have to kind of empathize with your market and think about, as you say, you wouldn't necessarily think of selling a children's book to, a bookstore on a military base, but when you think about it, well, of course you should, because they have kids too, just like everybody.
Sure. And I ask people to do what I call make a PAR statement, P-A-R. Take a sheet of paper, divide it in three columns. Left-hand column is problem, middle column is action, right-hand column is result. Left-hand, so the list all the problems the military people might experience, or people in whatever your target market is. The action step, what do you recommend in your book? And the right-hand column is a result. How do they benefit from reading your content? And then write a one-sentence statement of I help, who want, get. And if you can complete that, I help the spouses of service personnel who want to transfer their business on a regular basis get a way to do that. So if you can write that I help who want get sentence, and then when you're on a TV or radio show, people tell me, they may say, what's your book about? And in one sentence, I help who want get. So that PAR analysis can help people call out that the reason why people buy. And the more of these problems that you list, the more opportunity you find, and you start thinking about the service, the families, and so forth. And I think that's a great way to force you to be creative.
Right. Yeah, that's actually a great. I've never heard it put that way, but that's a great sentence to complete. And outside of the special sales market too, like a lot of other things you've been saying today. But let's move on to something else. Another area that I know a lot of authors. They desperately want to be successful in this, but they either don't know how to get started or how to approach it. But let's talk a little bit about libraries.
Okay.
First of all, why don't libraries buy all types of books? What makes the kind of book a library is going to want to have?
That's really a good point. A library has two collections. They have what's called a core collection and a patron-driven collection. The core collection would be the books that the top 10 fiction, top 10 nonfiction, or reference books. the patron-driven collection is what is demanded by or required by or asked about by their local patrons. So it might be an inner-city library would have a lot different patron-driven collection than would a rural library. So you have to find out what there are 120,000 libraries, and people look at that and say, well, I can sell 120,000 books, but that's just not the case. So you have to find out what the core collection, unless you have the reference books or the top 10 books, you probably wouldn't get involved with that. But you want to contact the acquisition librarian to find out what they're looking for in their patron-driven collection. And then you can show them how – the first question would be, how would you define your patrons? Which is actually a term I didn't know what libraries call the people that go there, and I asked them. They said they're called patrons. And so you would find out what their description of their patrons, and then say how your book can solve the problems of these people. So it's
right.
But those two collections, Chris, are the things that you need to really think about, not just selling books to libraries.
And then
Do you want me to continue on libraries for a minute? Or?
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
If you think about different kinds of libraries, I mentioned two before, the prison libraries and military libraries, but there are corporate libraries, there are college libraries, hospital libraries. So these, if you divide this is a really good concept in almost any special sales area. Instead of just looking at the segment, look at the subdivisions. For example, looking at the college market. Let's continue with the library. I'm sorry. You have the library. You have all these different types of opportunities of medical libraries, religious libraries, military libraries, prison libraries, hospital libraries, corporate libraries. They each buy for a different reason and they have different needs. So if you go to a hospital library with a book on how to finance a home mortgage, then they don't care. They're looking for books on entertainment or books on patient care, for example. Prison libraries are looking for books on legal advice, how to assimilate into the community. So they're looking for different content. And any segment that you list, and when you go through your market mapping program, you come up with a different segment. It could be colleges. Well, look at colleges. They have alumni. They have the college students. They have fundraising events. I went through the American Marketing Association, did fundraising events. You have the career development office, you have the bookstore, you have libraries, you have the book as a textbook. I thought, who wants the student to get a job more than the student does? Well, the parents. So I did a direct mail program to the parents of graduating college seniors and sold tens of thousands of books. So the more that you can subdivide when you do your market mapping, you come up with the major segments. But then the next step is to subdivide those into different areas. And libraries are a perfect example of how you can find those areas of opportunity within a particular market segment.
Right. So you said you actually did a direct mail campaign, and you sold the same book that you sold to the military bases?
Well, no, I wrote a book called Job Search 101 is my first title, actually. And that was a book that did not sell – well, it sold to the career development offices in college, but not to the students because they were not looking for a – they didn't want to spend $15 on a book. They wanted to buy a six-pack of beer.
Right.
So it's – just kidding, of course. But it's – so I was thinking, well, who has the money to buy the books? Who has the desire to have the student get a job? And I thought the parents. So I got the list and went to the American Student List Company out in Long Island, New York, and got a list of the graduating parents. Obviously, there are millions of those, so I just did a regional rollout. I did it in New England so I could just do some test marketing. And bundled, I had the Job Search 101, I had a book called Help Wanted, Inquire Within, and a video called The Art of Interviewing. Bundled those, sent them out to the parents, and they just bought tens of thousands of those because they had the money and they had the need to get the kids a job and get them out of the house.
Right.
Let me just take that one step further, Chris, that the students didn't want to spend the $15 for the book. So what I did is I took each chapter on resume writing, on cover letters, on interviewing, and created a booklet and sold those to the colleges, and they bought them from they bought them from me in tens of thousands and just gave them to the students. And I took the same booklets and sold those to the departments of labor in different states. So again, that gets back to the content. I was selling the information in the book. The format is a variable. It could be a video. It could be booklets. It could be a DVD. It could be a book. But the content is what you're selling to people, and the form is secondary.
Right, and that's a whole another conversation, right? Repackaging and repurposing and upselling and going from a $20 book to a $500 DVD package or whatever with the same content, essentially.
That's right. Yeah, that's what marketing is.
Right. So we're getting kind of close to the end of the interview here. Let me just ask you one last thing, and then we'll kind of get into some of the stuff that that you're into now. But I know a lot of people are interested in the big box discount stores, and we talked a little bit about those. But how is selling to a Walmart or other ones, Target, Sam's Club, those kinds of places? How are they different than from just a traditional bookstore?
Well, they're very similar in the sense that you don't want to sell those right away because they are something they may buy large quantities, but they're all returnable. So you don't want to sell. I think you have to sell through a distributor. You have to get Levy or Anderson Merchandisers to sell and to carry your books, and then you have to. They may ask for an escrow account for returnables. They may order 20,000 books, and potentially have 10,000 of them returned.
Right. So you might one day celebrate a huge sale, and then 2-3 months later, you're bankrupt because you made that huge sale.
Exactly right. Because you get the 20,000 books back, plus you have the money in the escrow account that you lost.
Right.
I always tell people just to avoid the big box stores and just to go to where you can get non-returnable sales. Start off with the government, as we talked before. Those are all non-returnable. They have to pay you in 30 days, and they have to return your calls, and they buy a lot of books. So go where the opportunities are. Then when you make your millions, then when the big box stores come to you, then you can dictate better terms.
Right. That's actually a great point. Start with, as you say, start with something that's non-returnable, and then work off of profits to take more risks, I guess, if that's...
Exactly. But government, military, it's the associations, corporations, they all buy non-returnable in most cases.
Right. Now, Brian, I guess when we first talked, this was probably, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, I guess, was the first time that we spoke. And it was for... an article that I wrote about this in Book Marketing Update, and I remember when I was researching it, there's a tremendous amount of opportunity. The problem, of course, is that it takes a lot of time to do all this research. But that's kind of what you do, right? I mean, you take on books on a commission-only basis, and you see what you can do with them?
We're doing that now. That's right, Chris. We have a catalog. We're sending out to about 1,800 rep groups. They're premium salespeople, not bookstore rep groups, but premium rep companies. And they are taking this catalog and selling the books in the catalog to corporations. And there is a setup fee to put it in two semi-annual catalogs and up on our website. But after that, it's a straight commission-only basis. And we buy the books on a non-returnable commission-only basis once they're sold.
So that's a great way if an author wants to spend time doing what they do best, which is probably writing. They can get you to handle this kind of stuff for them.
Sure, exactly right. But you hit the nail right on the head with that one, too. Most people don't want to get in the marketing of it. They want to write their next book, and they want to work in their day job, which is a good idea.
Right. Yeah, my former boss, I think, called authors reluctant entrepreneurs. they would rather not be, but they kind of have to be.
There you go.
Where can people go to find out more about this?
Well, the catalog, it's at premiumbookcompany.com is a website for that. But my site is bookmarketing.com, and that has links to everything we've talked about.
That links to everything. Great. Okay. Brian, again, I really, really appreciate it. And I hope that people took a lot away from this. Is there anything else that you want to say just before we end the call?
I think that you have to look at special sales marketing as a marathon, not a sprint. It's something that it takes a long time to make these sales work, but they can be in large quantities. Just give
right.
it time to evolve.
Give it time to mature, as it were, right?
There you go. That's right.
Great. Okay, Brian, I really appreciate it again. Thank you very much.
Chris, good talking to you again.
Okay, Brian. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to another installment of the Monsters of Book Marketing interview series presented by theauthorsedge.com. Again, my name is Chris Simmerall, and today's special guest was Brian Judd. You can reach Brian at www.bookmarketing.com. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll speak soon.